Greetings and welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church on Kirkpatrick Road in Burlington, North Carolina. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. If you'd like to correspond with Pastor Barkman and the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. The Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Pastor Greg Barkman.
If you have been following the Beacon Broadcast for the last couple of weeks, you know that we are studying what Romans chapter 1 says about the judgment of God. And four times in this chapter you find a declaration of God's judgment, and each time there's an explanation given as to why God judged and what the judgment consists of. And it seems to be something in descending order, that each judgment is related to the last one, but takes sinful men to a lower state of depravity, and I guess I should say a lower state in the expression and involvement of their lives in human depravity. And I think when we come to the last one, verse 28 and following, we have something of a summary of what has gone before. And that's the one we've been looking at here. And I read again Romans 1:28, "And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things which are not proper." And so, in general, this is what the whole chapter is talking about from verse 18 onward, namely, that God judges men because they reject the knowledge that God has given them. Because they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer. Because men reject the truth about God that God has given to men, then God gives them a very suitable judgment. He delivers them up, which is said, I think, twice, and then this time gave them over. He delivers men up to what they desire. When God stops people, sinful people, from getting what they desire, he's being merciful. When he allows them to have what they desire, he is being righteous. And he is being judgmental. He is judging them. Maybe judgmental sounds like something different than what I'm trying to say here. He is judging men when he gives them what they desire. And it's a strange irony, a strange paradox, isn't it? When sinful men are restrained from God from doing what they want to do, then they complain. They don't like that. They resent God restraining them from doing what they want to do. So God allows them to do what they want to do, which pleases them immensely. But what he has done is hastened their destruction. So they are pleased with God's judgments. They are pleased with their own sinful destruction. And what we read here in Romans 1:28 is that God gave them over to a depraved mind. So the heart of the matter of whether we are going to understand God and understand God's ways, and respond to God, it really is a matter of our mind, the way we are thinking. And what this text is telling us is that God is in control of our minds. God is in control of our logic. God is in control of our thought processes. God can enable a fallen son of Adam to think properly, and thinking properly is to think proper thoughts about God and to think proper thoughts about God's truth, about God's righteousness, about God's will, about God's ways, about everything that is godly. God can and does enable fallen sons of Adam to think properly about these things, but men don't even like that. They don't like to retain God in their knowledge. They don't like to think proper thoughts about God. They don't like to be troubled by thoughts about God that are proper thoughts about God. So they resent that, and God then judges them by giving them up to what they desire. And what they desire is that they have a mind that is not interfered with by God, not troubled by God, is not illuminated by God. They don't have to think about God. They don't have to think about righteousness, about truth, about the Bible, about God's commandments. They just don't have to think about those things. So God says, all right, I will give you over to a depraved mind. That is, I will give you over to a mind that is no longer able to think logically about truth. So he gives them over to the kind of mind that men have in their sinful condition apart from God's gracious intervention. Men left to themselves without God are going to have a depraved mind, a mind that does not think properly. Why? Because we have been ruined by the fall, and sin has altered our ability to think about God properly. We can only do that by God's help. So, if men don't want to think about God, and God gives them what they desire, what he gives them is a depraved mind. And he doesn't actively give it to them. Do you understand what I'm saying? He doesn't say, okay, I'm going to take away your sound mind, and I'm giving you a depraved mind. No, all he does is just remove from men's minds the ability to think properly about God, an ability which can only come from God, because sinful men don't have that ability in and of themselves. So he just simply says, okay, I'll leave you to yourself. I'll leave you alone. I'll remove my influence from your mind. You don't have to think about me. You don't have to think about my word. You don't have to think about righteousness. You don't have to think about my demands and claims upon your life. I'll just give you up. I'll give you over to a depraved mind, which is the kind of mind you will have apart from my active intervention in your mind. And when God does that, then they do things which are not proper, the catalog of which follows in verses 29, 30, and 31. And so men left to themselves, apart from God's gracious intervention, will not be able to think logically. And when I say that, I'm not saying that they won't be able to think logically about anything. They may be mathematical geniuses, they may be brilliant chemists, and whatever, but they will not be able to think logically about God, about eternal truth, about right and wrong, about moral issues. They will be incapable of doing that. And their depraved minds are going to reason illogically, but because they don't know what truth is anymore. They don't know what God is anymore. They don't have a capacity to understand and explore God and his truth anymore. Then their illogical thinking about these things seems to them to be perfectly logical. It seems to them to be the epitome of wisdom. And so they go on groping in blindness, incapable of understanding truth about God and about righteousness, and about morality. And what comes out of their life is the sin that's already in their hearts, but now unrestrained, and no mind that understands God that will suppress the sin that's in their heart, because when you understand who God is and what his righteousness is like, then you understand that it's not good to let these things out. But no longer having that understanding of things, then they think it's good to let these things out. As for example, when you go to a counselor, a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and you have a problem with anger, And he very well may say to you, well, what you need to do is vent your anger. That'll help you to get it out. But the fact of the matter is, the Bible tells us that it's not good to vent our anger. Now, that is one of those things that has been said so often that it's almost just become a truism, that everybody accepts that as being right. But it's not right. The best way to deal with your anger is to suppress it. Why? Because it's wrong. It's never right to yield to something that is wrong. But you don't understand how wrong that is if you don't have a capacity to understand who God is and what His ways are and what His truth is. So this seems perfectly logical. The way to deal with your anger is to just let it out, whatever it takes, vent it. Go someplace and shout and scream and get your anger out, work it out. And then when it's all out, then you've dealt with it, and then you can go back and relate to people properly, and you've let off steam, you've let your anger go, so presumably it's all gone now, and it won't be there to lash out at other people. But actually, that's not the way it works. What happens is, when you vent it, then it's easier to vent it again. Sin becomes easier every time you do it. The first time you willfully and consciously tell a lie, it may be very hard to do that. But having done it once, it's easier to do it the second time and the third time. And of course, the truth of the matter is, we go astray from the womb speaking lies. So it's a lot easier to lie than we think it is. But you may have never lied consciously to your parents or to a teacher or to an authority figure. And you may have been trained very carefully not to do that by godly parents. But you do it anyway. And it becomes easier the second time. And that's the way it is with all sin. You might find it very difficult to steal the first time because you have a God-given conscience that you shouldn't steal. Thou shalt not steal. And furthermore, you recognize that there may be painful consequences. If I get caught, that's not good. So you steal with fear and trepidation, but you do it anyway because that's what your heart desires to do, your sinful heart. So you steal a candy bar in the store and you get away with it. So what happens next? Does that mean now that you've done it, you've got it out of your system and you won't be inclined to do it again? No, the fact of the matter is you'll be more inclined to do it the second time and even more inclined to do it the third time and more inclined to do it the fourth time and so forth, and on it goes. And that's true in anything that is wrong. You are tempted to commit adultery, but you are very nervous about it. You don't find it easy to do, I hope, but you do it anyway because your sinful heart desires it. And so what happens? Well, having done it once, if you get by with it, don't get caught, are you more or less likely to do it again? Is it now true that because you did it, you got it out of your system, you let it out, you vented it, and now you won't be inclined to do it again? No, the fact of the matter is, it's just the opposite. Now that you have done it once, it'll be easier to do it the second time, and even easier the third time, and the fourth time, and the fifth time, and until it becomes a pattern, a way of life, a habit. So, the logic, the wisdom of this world, when it is bereft of the knowledge of God, is entirely wrong. But men don't understand that. Until tomorrow, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you His eternal peace.